Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Today's program is brought to you as a public service from Crawford Broadcasting. Hello to our newest listeners in Portland and San Francisco. Here at Real Science Radio, since our first full coronavirus program, when did we broadcast that? That was January 29th, 2020. We've reported our optimism that with the extraordinary advances in molecular biology, we may quickly see effective treatments for COVID-19. Let's listen for 10 seconds to a report from KNBC on one drug in trials, leronlimab.
Drug called leronlimab, already in trials for HIV and breast cancer. It's now being given on an emergency basis to 30 people with COVID-19 and appears to stop the virus from attacking the lungs.
Okay, now, an article in Medical Express dated, May 25th, from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine calls leronlimab a promising drug for the treatment of severe lung inflammation in COVID-19 patients. So get that, patients with severe lung inflammation. So in other words, when those infected with this coronavirus are already severely ill. Medical Express says for more information, see a preprint paper at MedArchive. So that's what we've done, and have on the line the lead author of that paper, Dr. Bruce Patterson with Inceldiax, and that company is involved with leronlimab. Dr. Patterson, can we begin with the science? We hear a lot these days about the cytokine storm. What in the world is a cytokine storm?
No, it's a very interesting question, and it's really not new to viral infections. It's something that occurs in a handful of influenza infections, as well as obviously COVID-19. And really what it refers to is during this immune response against the virus and virally infected cells, a number of different cell types, including lymphocytes, cells called NK cells, come into the lungs and produce a host of proteins that have different functions in the body. They're called cytokines or chemokines. Mm-hmm. And in particular, these cytokines can have positive functions, but in the course of doing their jobs can also have deleterious effects to the particular organs. In addition, these cells also produce a very powerful set of chemokines, which are, I like to call them immune magnets. It's another protein that draws immune cells into areas of inflammation. And the major one that we discovered in COVID is called RANTES, or CCL5.
Now, that's somewhat controversial, is it not, that you're saying that COVID-19 is a RANTES disease? Is that controversial?
I don't think it's controversial, because we're seeing more and more papers supporting what we found over 2.5 months ago. Again, it's such a heterogeneous disease that it's hard to overgeneralize about just one thing causing all the manifestations, but we have seen RANTES be consistently expressed in mild to moderate disease and in severe disease. And oh, by the way, RANTES can also cause renal failure. RANTES can cause liver toxicity. RANTES can cause coagulopathies because it's produced by activated platelets. So for me, RANTES really signals this transition from a virologic disease to a immunologic disease. And when RANTES is produced at high levels in the body, it draws immune cells into those areas, which produce more cytokines and more chemokines. Then you bring in more immune cells and more cytokines and more chemokines. And so you have this vicious cycle of immune cells coming in and producing this overly zealous, vigorous immune response that leronlimab is basically breaking that cycle and also enhancing the immune system to do a better job at fighting off the virus. And the manifestations we see of that is the fact that leronlimab actually lowers viral load. So here's an immune modulator actually functioning as a antiviral.
There have been a few studies already begun, some in progress. Let's get to those in just a moment. And that's how you'd be able to say this, that this drug is lowering the viral load. But a couple things about what you've already said, that this COVID-19 seems to be a heterogeneous disease. And also, it sounds like I'm a computer programmer from back in the 1980s, worked at McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company. We used recursion, and you'd get into an infinite loop where some function keeps calling itself, and pretty soon you run out of RAM in the computer and the whole thing crashes. So is there an immune system to various pathogens where the immune response becomes a greater threat than the pathogen itself?
You're absolutely right, and you hit the nail on the head. It's immunologic chaos. And then what happens is you start sequestering all these immune cells in areas of inflammation. And then when you look at the blood, as we did in our paper, we saw immune cell populations that were, a sixth of what they should be. And so these patients have signs of severe immunosuppression. They have the cytokine storm. And of course, they have viral replication. And the beautiful thing about leronlimab is it addresses all three. It restores the immune system homeostasis. It quiets the cytokine storm by inhibiting IL-6 by reprogramming macrophages. And oh, by the way, along those lines, by normalizing the immune response, we're also seeing this reduction in plasma viral load. And of course, we were the first to discover that there was COVID actually in the blood that could be followed as opposed to following it in nasopharyngeal swabs.
Wow. So the studies underway and already completed. The first study at Albert Einstein College of Medicine was, it seems like a very small study, 10 patients, but they were severely ill. And you were, I believe, the lead author when that study was reported. It's not been peer-reviewed yet, but it's available at MedArchive online. Can you describe the results of that study? And I realize we're talking about human beings, right? These are not 10 data points. These are 10 people, and they were severely ill.
I would go so far as to say beyond severely ill. Oh. I believe 8 out of the 10 had received renal transplants. They had signs of liver failure. These were the sickest of the sick. Mm. And again, 5 out of those patients that we initially studied survived when 90% of them shouldn't have survived. And, wow. I should also add that the ones who didn't survive, it wasn't due to the fact that they were allowed to go through their disease course. It was just a lack of resources, lack of dialysis machines at the time. I mean, it was chaos in New York City. And basically, they didn't receive the supportive care that they should have, in the ones that did pass away. For instance, we had a patient in San Jose who was on life support for 30 days and was on leronlimab and had the time to actually recover, because recovery from being on life support and intubation may take a month or 5 weeks.
Wow.
Or 6 weeks.
Great point. Great point.
It takes an extreme amount of resources to keep those patients going. But this patient in San Jose is now in rehab and will soon be going home off of life support.
Wow, that's awesome. So that first study with 5 of the patients recovering, that was called a positive result. There was real excitement. The FDA approved an application for a phase 2 trial of leronlimab, and that was to enroll 75 patients with mild to moderate COVID-19. Could you tell us about that study?
Yeah, and in addition, they also approved a phase 2b/3 trial in severe patients, and we're enrolling both. And were very excited about it because they don't have this huge list of comorbidities that this initial group saw. And then in addition, there was also EIND or emergency use patients from UCLA where 26 of the 28 patients treated there showed improvement. So, you know, like I said, it's a very heterogeneous disease. We happened to get our first look at a patient group that was in horrible shape. And we saved some of those people, and we're very proud of that. But when we look at patients who are either mild to moderate or severe that aren't quite as critical as those patients in New York, we're seeing even better results. And that's what's so exciting for me.
Wow. The study, that third study you just mentioned, is that the study with 390 patients? Or is that yet another study?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the severe trial, the phase 2b3 trial with 390 patients with an interim analysis at 50 patients, which we're getting close to here, probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks. So,
and that is a randomized double blind trial. So this is going to really put this drug to the test.
That's correct. They are both double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trials. Yes, we're following the rules, and we're excited about going through the process with the FDA, and we're very pleased with how the trial has been going, and we're very confident that we're going to see similar results to the patients that we already showed. Because, you know, as much as they say the patients that we treated are anecdotal reports.
Yeah.
You know, what we saw, for instance, in these patients who are on ECMO or life support is, you know, they served as their own control. This one patient was on ECMO for 30 days, did a course of hydroxychloroquine, did a course of remdesivir, did not improve. Nothing is more powerful as a control as the patient themselves.
Right.
Because even in double-blind placebo-controlled trials, you only control for age and sex. You can't control for genetics or the state of the immune response. There's so many additional variables in, quote, placebos. But in the same patient treated with different drugs in two drug regimens doesn't change or doesn't come off ECMO, then on the third comes off ECMO within 3 days, you actually have an internal control, which is the same exact patient to compare to. So I don't accept, you know, the word anecdote lightly,
right.
Especially in some of the patients that we've treated. And having been a pathologist for 30 years and a virologist for 25 years, you know, you have some experience that tells you if something's working and something's not working.
So
again, we want to go through the proper channels. We'll go through the proper trials, but you know, after being in medicine for a period of time, you have an intuition or a hunch, and I know that doesn't buy you much with drug approvals, but
right,
it gives one confidence.
Well, and the pause that others may have can come from what you have stated that COVID-19 is a heterogeneous disease. I've listened to some podcasts you've been on, so I know what you're saying, but could you explain that to the audience?
Yeah, you know, there's some nice graphics out there that at least show graphically what I'm talking about, where in the early part of the disease, even asymptomatic disease, you're infected by the virus. The virus is replicating, but there seems to be a switch. And there is a molecular switch that says this is no longer truly a virologic disease, but now there's this immune component that's coming into play, and that immune component can cause some serious damage, as well as good if you're able to tailor it in such a way that it's effective. And I truly, truly believe, having seen the full spectrum of disease, that molecular switch is the increase in RANTes. In mild to moderate disease, you see a 3 to 5-fold increase in this protein, RANTES. In severe to critical disease, you see 100-fold, 300-fold, maybe even 1,000-fold increase in RANTES. And so, you know, I really truly believe that that is the molecular switch. And it makes sense because it is the immune cell magnet. When you see a lot of schematics of COVID disease and the cytokine storm, you see these pictures of the lung with all the requisite immune cells already in place and interacting with the virally infected cells. The big question remains, how did they get there? And that's the question that RANTES answers. How do those immune cells get there in the first place? And, you know, at what point does that go from being effective, an effective innate immune response, an effective, eventually adaptive immune response, to the point where it actually becomes harmful? And we see that every day in diseases like, for instance, shingles, which is, you know, a varicella zoster viral infection. How do you treat that when you have all the right tools? Well, you give an antiviral, acyclovir, to fight the virus. But what else do you give? You give a steroid to prevent the pain because of the damage that the virus is causing to the nerves, right? So this is not the first time that we've looked at this strategy. The other thing that's exciting about leronlimab is how it's functioning in cancer. And we know, we've seen that in the last 5 years with immunotherapy. Immunotherapy has changed the face of cancer therapy.
Yeah, Dr. Patterson, the solid metastatic cancers that you guys have been treating, we have done over the last 3 years a series of programs on targeted antibody treatment, revolutionizing cancer treatment, with a number of oncologists beginning to use the word cure, something for 100 years they wouldn't use that word. And so I'm interested to see how leronlimab is interacting with the rest of the industry that's moving toward antibody treatment. Could you explain that? Regarding these cancers?
That's such a great question. I think what we're seeing with leronlimab in cancer is why it's working in COVID. It's not because of its activity in HIV. It has nothing to do with blocking, you know, the CCR5 receptor, which is the co-receptor of HIV. What we found with leronlimab in cancer is its ability to inhibit T regulatory cells, which inhibit the immune response against cancer. And it also reprograms macrophages from being pro-inflammatory and making molecules like interleukin-6 to more effector cells, where the macrophages are actually anti-tumor. And the fact is, we see drugs like Opdivo and Keytruda revolutionizing cancer therapy.
Yeah, we've been reporting on exactly those drugs. Go ahead.
Right. And why are they doing that? Well, they're using the most powerful anti-tumor therapy that we have in the world, and that is the body's own immune system. Mm. And when we first got into COVID, again, I was met with some resistance because, you know, of the particular mechanism that leronlimab uses in HIV therapy. But I had to convince, you know, the world that in emerging infections, we don't know what the pathogen is. We have to come up with a generalized, broadly acting antiviral. And viruses and tumor cells are fought off in a similar manner by the cellular arm of the immune system and CD8 T cells. And the fact is, you know, Opdivo and Keytruda bring the function of those CD8 T cells back into play against tumor by blocking the PD-1, PD-L1 axis. By the same token, we can enhance the immune response against unknown viral pathogens by using immune modulators like like leronlimab, which inhibits Tregs. Tregs inhibit the innate immune response. Tregs inhibit the adaptive immune response. And then if we change the macrophages from being pro-inflammatory, which is what's producing this cytokine storm, to being more effector macrophages, then we actually can produce an effective antiviral response in the absence of knowing what the pathogen is or coming up with a pathogen-specific therapy. As we're seeing in COVID-19 right now, pathogen-specific therapies take time. We need, as part of our, you know,
our arsenal, we need, as part of our arsenal,
nation, we need to stockpile approaches and drugs that can be used in the front lines immediately against emerging pathogens that we have no idea what they are until we can come up with pathogen specific therapies and prevent some of the early deaths and the extraordinary increase in infections that we're seeing, for instance, in COVID. We have to treat emerging infections like that.
Okay.
Broad anti-pathogen approaches followed down the line by more pathogen-specific approaches when they come, if they come.
Dr. Bruce Patterson, because this interview has used so many terms that a lot of our listeners will not be familiar with, I'd like to ask you to explain to the audience Arantes disease, even though we're 20 minutes beyond that point in our discussion, if we could back up and explain that.
Okay. I mean, like I said, the simplest analogy is Arantes is a immune cell magnet. So imagine your lung having the, you know, a bunch of magnets in the lung that draw in haphazardly immune cells, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't stop. These immune cells come in, they make more magnets, and then those magnets pull in more immune cells into the point where the immune cells and the and what the immune cells make ultimately does the damage in the lungs. And by the same token, ultimately does the damage in the kidneys and ultimately does the damage in the liver.
Wow.
And ultimately may contribute to the coagulation problems, the clotting, et cetera.
And we are seeing these problems in COVID-19 patients?
Absolutely. One third of hospitalized patients with COVID have some level of renal failure. Wow. You know, probably the same numbers have this elevations of ALT and other liver enzymes. Mm. Okay. And we certainly have seen a lot in the, literature or even in the press about, you know, coagulation, strokes, amputations, et cetera. And of course, what do activated platelets, which are involved in coagulation, make? Arantes. Okay. So, you know, there's a recurring theme that we're seeing by looking at these patients across the spectrum. And even in children, this Kawasaki's like disease that we're seeing in children in New York and Italy.
Very small numbers, but yes.
Yes, if you look in the literature, what's predominant in Kawasaki's disease? Arantes and two other proteins, MIP1 beta and MCP1. But the bottom line is you're seeing this recurring theme of severe inflammation causing multi-organ system damage.
So we are, Dr. Patterson, we're nearing the end of our interview. Something you said, and one of our favorite molecular biologists, Dr. Kevin Anderson, has said that when you harness the body's own immune system, he describes it like heavy artillery, and you're going to win the fight when the immune system is functioning properly, correctly. So that's what leronlimab is all about. And I'd like to close by asking you, now you're not a disinterested party, right? Thankfully today, it's routinely required when publishing to include a competing interest statement. And of course, tremendous medical advances come from for-profit companies. So your work with Inceldiax and Cytodyne, could you explain the relationship between the two companies.
Yes, it's actually very synergistic. And, you know, the fact is, and I think one of the big drawbacks with launching drugs into the world is if you don't have companion diagnostics or diagnostics saying that the drug is actually doing what it's supposed to be doing, then you're just using the patients as a guinea pig. Okay. And I think that's why personalized medicine, companion diagnostics have been such a big, important part of pharmaceuticals and therapies in the last 5 to 10 years. And we got 4 steps ahead in COVID by having a suite of assays for leronlimab that actually say leronlimab is doing exactly what leronlimab should be doing. Wow. And I think at the end of the day, if you link diagnostics, molecular diagnostics that say the drug is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing, and oh, by the way, the outcomes are positive
in these clinical trials, right? In CellDX, you guys describe yourselves as a single cell diagnostic company. That is so fascinating to me. Could you explain that? A single cell diagnostic company.
Yeah, so we reduced our diagnostics to the cell. You know, they talk about personalized medicine, which means one person's tumor is different than another person's tumor. We've got a tailor therapy, correct?
Right.
I would submit, and InCellDX's premise is that even in the same patient,
wow,
the cells of the tumor are different.
Wow.
And you almost have to tailor therapy on a cell by cell basis.
Wow.
And that's what InCellDX is all about. We have the capabilities of doing that. In fact, we just finished doing what we call in situ sequencing. So everybody's talking about molecular sequencing and next gen sequencing, right? Well, they take a tumor, they put it in a blender, they blast it open, and they sequence everything that's there, right? But they've lost the context from where that cell came or what that cell is. InCellDX knows exactly where those molecular markers are coming from, and it knows exactly where those proteins markers are coming from, and can say that cell is doing X, that cell is doing Y, and you may have to treat them differently.
So Dr. Bruce Patterson, you've helped me communicate to the audience why we have been so optimistic about the hope for treating not only this disease, but so many other existing and sadly diseases that will emerge in the future. So thank you for your work. We're going to link to both of these companies and the trials that are underway. And we really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Really, really great conversation. Again, I'm so pleased that you're on top of this and really trying to get the information out to as many people as possible. Take care.
And we thank Crawford Broadcasting for making this program possible. For Fred Williams and Real Science Radio, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.